From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Another protest over the suspension of Brazil's president, this one with the cast and crew of the Brazilian film Aquarius staging an improvised protest on the red carpet of the Cannes competition in the south of France. They denounced her suspension as a coup d'etat, saying, quote, "We will resist," closed quote. Brazil's suspended president spoke out again against her suspension, as RT's Nicolas Sanchez reports.
In an exclusive interview with RT, Dilma Rousseff sent a very clear message, not only to her supporters, but to her political opponents, her political enemies. Rousseff had very strong words for the new interim president, for Michel Temer. She said his government was exclusive and had no legitimacy.
The media here in Brazil are highly critical when it comes to me, my government, and our allies. But they tend to favor the interim government and avoid criticizing it, despite the peculiar situation that has arisen.
The president also warned about the intentions of this new interim government. She said that she fears that Michel Temer wants to cut social programs that have helped millions of Brazilians in the past. And she encouraged Brazilians to fight for democracy.
Brazil's leftist government is the latest in Latin America to suffer a setback recently. RT's Guyane Chichikayan reports on what's behind the political turbulence in the region and who's behind it.
It's not just Brazil. Populist, left-wing governments across Latin America have been under pressure in recent years, with violent coup attempts in Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, and successful ousters of democratically elected leaders in Honduras and Paraguay. That is just recent history. Latin America saw a number of violent takeovers of power in the 70s and 80s in countries like Chile, Argentina, El Salvador. One thing that the coups had in common was that the United States actively supported the brutal military regimes which took over. The recent military coup in Honduras made some wonder if the U.S. is back at it again. In 2009, the Honduran military kidnapped democratically elected president Manuel Zelaya and then oversaw elections that were widely seen as fraudulent. Hillary Clinton, U.S. Secretary of State at the time, worked to legitimize the new government. In 2010, she said, "We think that Honduras has taken important and necessary steps that deserve the recognition and the normalization of relations." By doing this, Secretary Clinton effectively legitimized the coup. Could the U.S. help legitimize the new unelected leadership in Brazil? U.S. officials have been publicly quiet about the turmoil in Brazil, but this may change. Acting President Michel Temer's powerful ally in the parliament just came to Washington to meet with various U.S. officials, including Undersecretary of State and former ambassador to Brazil, Thomas Shannon. Brazilian Senator Aloysio Nunes is one of the key opposition figures leading the fight to oust Dilma. He's in Washington, presumably to get support. This may not play very well in Brazil, where many are already critical of U.S. involvement in Latin American coups. In Washington, I'm Ganesh Chakyan, RT.
In Venezuela, the leader of the right-wing opposition, Enrique Capriles, escalated calls Tuesday for mobilization there with an implicit appeal to the armed forces to revolt, saying, quote, "The hour of truth is coming," closed quote, for the military to take sides. But the political turmoil in one of those countries, Argentina, apparently won't upset trade relations with China. China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, met with his counterpart from Argentina, Susana Malcara, in Beijing Thursday. CCTV's Wu Guozhu reports from Beijing.
It's Argentine Foreign Minister Susana Macaulay's first official visit to China. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi says bilateral cooperation will continue to expand.
"We understand and support the Argentine government's new targets. We will expand cooperation in basic infrastructure, telecom, tourism, and technology. We'll also explore a cooperation on international production capacity and join hands to enter third-party markets."
There have been concerns that the new government might shake up the bilateral cooperation. But the Argentine foreign minister said the government has been verifying previously agreed upon Chinese invested projects in the country, including hydropower and nuclear plants.
CCTV, Beijing.
That meeting happened as a military delegation sent by Argentina's President Mauricio Macri signed an agreement Wednesday on military cooperation with the United States, which includes the establishment of a U.S. military base there. Paraguay's leftist president Fernando Lugo was removed in June of 2002 under similar circumstances facing Brazil's suspended president. The same day he was impeached by Paraguay's Congress, a delegation of Paraguayan politicians, led by the head of the Parliamentary Defense Committee and opposition member José López Chávez, met with U.S. military officials to negotiate the establishment of a U.S. military base in that country. And now our weekly segment with Margaret Kimberly, who writes a column under the title Freedom Rider, published weekly at blackagendareport.com. Her column this week compares the vigorous action taken by the Obama administration on transgender restrooms in North Carolina with its failure to act on several life and death issues facing black communities across the country. We spoke with her from New York via Skype Thursday.
I wrote about, there are two things that happened last week that were on my mind. The first was that George Zimmerman, the man who murdered Trayvon Martin and was acquitted, was trying to auction the gun he used to kill him, to kill Martin. And several attempts, I don't know if he's succeeded as of yet, and obviously he bragged about having committed the murder. And obviously there was a great deal of outrage, but I was outraged, I have been from the beginning, because the Obama Justice Department did not choose to prosecute him under civil rights laws, and there are precedents for this. Black people are so gullible and so ready to love Obama that it was enough for him to say, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon, and that was enough. And he didn't have to lift a finger to bring this man to justice. At the same time, last week, the Obama Justice Department, which has not prosecuted George Zimmerman or any of the killer cops, issued an order, a directive to public schools in the country to provide restrooms for transgender students, that is to say to allow kids who identify as transgender to use the bathroom of their choice. And that is not a bad thing. It's
right.
Okay.
Right.
But it strikes me, as, first of all, as very much a first world problem.
Right.
First of all,
for sure.
We don't. No one even knows how many transgender kids there are who are in need of this. But we definitely know that black people are in need of protection from cops and from vigilantes, with one of us being killed every 28 hours
mm-hmm.
without any federal protection.
Mm-hmm. You know, by the way, transgender people likewise get killed, and that's not really caught the attention of the Justice Department either.
No, it's true. It was just about an issue which, you know, Obama, this is one of his specialties, addressing an issue of concern to a small segment of liberal white people. And I'm not going to say it shouldn't be done. I think it would be interesting to find out how much this is needed. Obviously, there's a lot of reaction. This whole issue of restroom use by transgender people has created this bizarre controversy across the country. And one of the things I said in my column was, if you've ever used a public restroom, you've used a restroom with a transgender person.
Yeah, right.
You just didn't know it.
Right.
But this is being used to gin up on the right wing. They're quickly losing issues to use to motivate their voters. Gay marriage is now a fact. The Supreme Court has spoken. There's nothing they can do about that. And Americans who are loath to address any really crucial issues, who won't address the fact that of climate change, that we've for the past 5 months we've had record high temperatures on the planet, who won't address the fact of police murder or the pervasiveness of racism, who won't address any number of things but can be, like Pavlov's dogs, be triggered into being hysterical about something they hadn't even thought of a couple of months ago. And, of course, so that makes it easy for Obama to get brownie points amongst the group of people that he covets. It makes it easy for him then to be attacked by the right wing, which then leads to liberals saying, oh, we must protect the Democrats. Look how horrible the Republicans are. They won't let transgender people use the bathroom they want. Right. And sure enough, there have been these cases of women who they're not transgender. They're just women
right.
using ladies' rooms. And if they look masculine or women who are lesbians, they've been arrested in some of, you know, these states like North Carolina where this has been a big issue. So, yes, there is a cause for concern, but transgender people, even when they're killed for being transgender, it doesn't happen as often as it does to black people. Black people
right.
are killed by the police and by vigilantes for just about anything.
Right.
Being in the wrong, you know, driving while black, walking while black, any number of things can the way that black people are treated is the worst human rights situation in this country. But it is the most pervasive problem in this country. But it's the one that is never addressed, and not even by the putatively black president.
You know, not for nothing, in addition to that, there's the history. I mean, first of all, the greatest crime against humanity that was ever committed was committed to the ancestors, against the ancestors of these very people who, rather than getting reparations for that, are still catching hell.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's the root of the problem. Our you know, America is a place of conquest. The conquest first, the genocide against the indigenous people, then quickly followed by a second genocide of the transatlantic slave trade, and then 200 years of chattel slavery, and then followed by Jim Crow. That's the root of most of, I believe, most of America's problems. And it's not addressed because it's the foundation, the very foundation upon which this country is built. It's normalized, it's accepted, it's considered beneficial. And so that is why it has not been addressed. Most white people, if you just look at Stop and Frisk in New York City, which reached such terrible numbers when Bloomberg was mayor, every poll showed most white people thought Stop and Frisk was okay. Keeping black people under physical control is the very part of the very foundation of the United States. And that's why, and that's why it isn't talked about. But that's also why it must be talked about. But you know, there's always some other group who gets attention first. And I'm not going to say that people who are disabled, we should not fight for their rights. I'm not going to say that. There are various groups who face various sorts of discrimination, and I'm certainly in favor of people standing up for their rights. But I just I think it was worthy of noting that the people who are treated the worst, and I think that is something that can be proven with data, that black people are at the bottom by every measure. We lead in everything bad. We're at the bottom of everything good. And for our needs to never, ever be addressed, no matter what happens to us, while a group can suddenly get attention from the media and from certain segments of the population and be addressed immediately when we don't even know how great their need is, I think is it's emblematic of the problem of the persistence of racism in this country.
You know, maybe an analog would be the way that the epidemic of opioid abuse among the white population has suddenly changed the drug problem from a criminal problem to a public health problem.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, we were told that, it still remains the discrepancies in sentencing for crack and powder cocaine. It's all cocaine.
Yeah.
But crack cocaine was used mostly by black people. And these crackdowns that started, first the war on drugs under Reagan, and then Bush, and then Clinton, these horrendously long sentences for crack cocaine that didn't send not any white person to jail, ever. And now we see, because heroin addiction is a problem, a terrible problem in so many, you know, and it's interesting, it starts with the legal drugs. There are people using OxyContin to get high, right. But that proved expensive, and there was a crackdown and regulation on prescribing OxyContin. People turn to heroin. It's cheaper and, you know, does the same thing. So now this is a terrible problem in many parts of the country, but this is a problem that impacts white people most. So now there's empathy for addicts, and there should be. I'm not saying there should not be, but it depends on the color of the addict, clearly. And if there's a black person who has fallen victim to substance abuse or sells a small amount of drugs, they are hit with the hammer. And I remember when these harsh laws were being debated, and everyone said these laws will get the kingpins. We'll get, you know, I'm not sure what a kingpin is, right. But at any rate, it became the word du jour for politicians to talk about getting the drug kingpins. Mm-hmm. But these things just enveloped the black community. These were convenient ways to keep black people under physical control yet again.
Yeah. Looking at it from the point of view of the Justice Department, if you're going to decide where to throw your resources and you're trying to identify problems that you can address, it seems to me that the place to start would be to look at the severity of the problem in terms of impact. In other words, so, mm-hmm. like, for example, being killed mm-hmm. being the most severe, the pervasiveness of the problem, that, you know, in other words, it doesn't happen, you know, every 3 weeks or every 28 hours. You know, the history of the problem, and just generally these things, if you balance anything that the Justice Department has done against this particular problem facing black folks across the country, it seems that this should have been at the top of the list.
Oh, absolutely. But the FBI won't even keep statistics on how often, for example, people are killed by the police. It's left to citizens and activist groups, to the media. The Guardian newspaper has, for the past year or so, been keeping a comprehensive record of police killings in this country. Last year it was over 11,000. 1,100 some odd people of every race killed by the police in the United States. 300 of those, though, were black. Mm. And it appears to be the numbers on track for this year. But the FBI, which keeps statistics on everything from arson to murder to bank robbery, says that they don't have a reliable number of how often the police are involved in fatal encounters. And that's just hard to believe. They don't do it because they don't want to do it, and they're now claiming that they will, or they'll try to figure it out while other people just go through media reports, and the Malcolm X grassroots movement did right. that, and that they came up with the 28-hour number.
Right.
And so here you have an organist, and it's clear where the priorities are. It is just not a priority, and it's no more of a priority because Obama is president. He gets to be president black people are still proud and happy to see a black president. Many white people who are racist attack everything he says and does, which leads mm-hmm. the people who love him to love him even more. Mm-hmm. So he can get away with doing nothing. He can just say, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon, and black people say, he's paying attention to this case, when he mm-hmm. didn't lay a finger on the killer. Or last year when a young white man went into a church, black church in South Carolina, and killed 8 or 9 people. And the president attended a funeral of one of the victims, who was a minister and state legislator. And all he did was sing Amazing Grace, and people went nuts. He purposefully went to the murder to tap down on black anger about this killing. And it worked. sadly. But this is the sort of thing that's been going on ever since his presidential campaign. So this is a situation black people find ourselves in, even when we have someone in office, in high office. It could be the presidency or mayor or governor. Black people get these positions precisely because they assure white people that they're not going to address our concerns.
You know, looking at the restructuring of the domestic policing apparatus architecture with the creation of DHS and all that, it actually would be quite easy for the federal government, if it so decided, to impose, say, a condition on federal funding through DHS of various programs, buying cameras or, you know, guns or whatever they do, to say, you know, if you get this funding, you have to report all police killings to the FBI.
Oh, sure. It would be very easy. It would be very easy to. There are any number of ways the federal government can have control over local law enforcement. I remember when I'm old enough to recall when I turned 18, it was legal to buy alcohol at 18. Mm-hmm. And Reagan became president, and drunk driving was an issue. And he issued an order to any state that wanted federal highway money, right, couldn't get it unless they raised the legal drinking age to 21.
Right.
So overnight, the legal drinking age became 21. That's the kind of power that presidents have. And Obama uses it all the time. He suddenly claimed a right to assassinate American citizens.
Right.
There's no legislation, no case law, nothing. He just said he could do it, and he did.
Right.
And killed Anwar al-Awlaki and his teenage son. So when they say that, oh, the bar for prosecution of these cases is so high, that's nonsense. Mm-hmm. It's high if you don't want to do anything. And that's the situation with Obama. He does not want to do, and as he said in his, you know, maiden speech at the 2004 Democratic Convention, there is no white America, there is no black America. So that was a signal to the powers that be. He was not going to address any issues that affect black people. And that has been how he has behaved since that time.
You know, looking for relief in the political system, you've got, let's see, Trump, okay, his newspaper ad back at, on the Central Park 5, Central Park 4 case speaks for mm-hmm. itself. You've got Clinton, who, at least in the South, was drawing lots of black voters, who has, you know, complained about this but hasn't actually proposed anything. Mm-hmm. And you've got Sanders, who has also complained about it but hasn't made a material proposal that I'm aware of other than saying he would stop it.
Well, absolutely. And then they, you know, then there's this ghoulish political game of getting support from the famous victims of police killing. So one candidate says Michael Brown's mother is endorsing me, and someone else says Trayvon Martin's mother is endorsing me.
Right.
And it's absurd.
Yeah.
Because neither Clinton nor Sanders has said what, if anything, they would do differently to bring justice to these people.
Yeah.
And yet they're able to get away with by using the right words at the right moments or being having a photo op with the right family. They give the impression that they would act differently when we have no evidence of that. And who knows, maybe a President Trump would actually do more than either one of them.
Mm.
I'm getting less and less afraid of a Trump presidency, to be perfectly honest, when you look at Hillary's history and the fact that she's announced some plan to bring back her husband. That's you know, people were saying they'd leave the country if Trump became president. I get the feeling we should pack our bags no matter who becomes the president, because things look so terrible.
The only problem with leaving the country when that happens is that the missiles are aimed outwards, you know. So I don't know if you're safe wherever you land. That's the problem.
That's true. That is true, too.
You know, one of the things I notice on a lot of issues, like you just saw recently a bill passed in the Senate to strip Saudi Arabia of sovereign immunity with respect to the 9/11 families, the victims' families. And, you know, the way people organize, they get groups of people that draft proposed legislation, they find sponsors, they throw it out into the, you know, political sphere and say, take a position on this or whatever. You know, you have all these families of, you know, victims that have been accruing at the rate of 28 every 28 hours for years and years and years. Why isn't anyone sitting down and saying, okay, this is our, you know, our consensus position that there should be legislation that A, requires a disclosure of this stuff at a minimum, and on and on and on, whatever that list ends up being, and then dumping that out and saying, where do you stand on this?
Well, yes, I think that's one simple way to do it. I ironically, I think that would happen if we had a Republican president instead of a Democrat. Democrats just stand down when there's a Democrat in the White House. And so we have inaction on issues like police killing or even support of Bill Clinton getting rid of welfare as an entitlement or increasing the sentencing for drug crimes and making it all sorts of things, not just long sentences, but if you're convicted of a drug offense, you can't get a federal student loan, you can't live in federal housing, people punished for life for what could be minor offenses. And no one said anything. No one said anything when he got rid of welfare, and nobody says anything when Obama sits there and acts like his hands are tied and there's nothing he can do to bring justice to people. I think actually when you have a Republican in office, you have some more action from Democrats. So there are any number of simple ways to do this, but there's just not enough political will and not enough organizing on the part of activists to demand and get redress.
And finally, just generally, the leadership on this issue that should be in the Congress, in the CBC, and in the Progressive Caucus, it should be actually quite broadly based. If you consider the, you know, the horror of the offense that we're talking about, the daily killing by police of black people, and also, by the way, two other people that day, too. Why is there no action whatsoever that's, you know, can be metered in either House of Congress, you know, and even mobilizing on the ground? I understand that we have a Democratic president now, but we've only had him 8 years. This was going on 8 years ago as well.
That's true. I think... I don't know that we have a progressive caucus. I know that the so-called progressive caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, used to be called the Conscience of the Congress, but once they were targeted for big money, they became like everybody else in Congress. The Progressive Caucus, I don't know how progressive they are, really. It's been a long time since there have been a significant number of even left-leaning Democrats. So I think it's an indication of how the shift to the right in American politics. I always say we have the two major parties in this country. One is far right, the other is center right. And any demands have to come from below. And I think that people just didn't, in general, the general public, I did not know until the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement report, I did not know how often the police killed people in this country. But now we do know. And so I think now is the test. We do know. And so now what are we going to do? And I think a presidential election year is the worst time to expect any activism because we are encouraged to vote, but not to do much else. And people are making these calculations about citing why it's more important, it's better for Hillary Clinton to be the president, which is why she got the support of so many black voters. So there we are with issues literally of life and death not being addressed.
Margaret Kimberly, freedom writer at BlackAgendaReport.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.